traditionally it's been mostly a kind of grassroots staff volunteer type mm-hmm. effort. Many offices start their greening efforts because somebody cares about it, and they develop, you know, they recruit some volunteers and they convene together and they think about ways that they can green their office just as a volunteer mm-hmm. effort. But increasingly, you know, and then it becomes typically a part-time, okay, this is, you guys are doing good work. You're actually saving us some money and increasing the quality of workspace. So let's build it into some existing position.
Mm-hmm.
So it becomes kind of an add-on, like you said. But increasingly what we're seeing is that sustainability professionals is an emerging field.
Mm-hmm.
And because sustainability touches so many different areas of expertise, I think we're only seeing the tip of the iceberg right now of the potential for development of sustainability professionals.
It's interesting to me because for a long time, companies and agencies viewed green and environmental friendly operations as being a cost center and not a potential profit center. And it's been within the last couple of years that has really reversed, and organizations, especially federal agencies when it comes to energy consumption, are seeing just the power of scale, if nothing else, can really save them a lot of money.
You can see money savings for many sustainability projects immediately.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of other sustainability projects, the key is to understand where to draw the boundaries around cost and benefit. And historically, one of our shortcomings and one of the reasons we've been so unsustainable is that we draw the cost too narrowly. We only look really at purchase price. What does it cost me today to buy this?
Mm-hmm.
But once you expand that and start including what has been externalized costs and start including a longer time frame and looking at a total cost or a life cycle cost,
mm-hmm.
then sustainability becomes cost neutral to cost saving.
Mm-hmm.
And I just finished demonstrating that for a green roof project on our campus. But once you incorporate the savings by not needing to replace the roof as soon as you would have, not needing to pay the impervious area charges that we now pay in the district, which mm-hmm. is a stormwater fee,
mm-hmm.
Counting the energy savings, all of those savings together end up meaning that when you look at the total life of the roof, you're going to save money when it's a green roof instead of spending money. First cost is going to be a little bit higher.
Mm-hmm.
But you recoup that cost over time.
What's been the driver for that change of mindset? Because, as you said, that's been the mindset for, you know, as long as I can remember, as long as anybody can remember, that's the way that everybody approached costing. And that's really been a big change just in the last couple of years.
I think there are a few factors. One is that green products are coming down in price in part because they've been around longer.
Mm-hmm.
So we're getting better at making them. As we achieve scale with them, they're just coming down in cost through the natural
like any other
forces.
Product. Yeah.
Right, exactly. They're more available, easier to get. All of that brings down the price. But so does incorporating externalized costs through things like federal mandates and other government regulations that help the user incorporate a cost that they had not been responsible for in the past. Another thing that's changing is that people are starting to see that we're running up against limits. And as we run up against limits, first costs for conventional ways of doing things start climbing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, waste removal and hauling starts rising in cost. So things like recycling and composting become more attractive even at the beginning because you're avoiding the cost of managing waste.
Mm-hmm.
Energy prices rise, it becomes more attractive to save energy. So it's a combination of all those factors.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the myths that are associated with this field as it turns into its own field, rather, as you said, than somebody being asked to also do it in addition to everything else? What are some of the misconceptions that people have?
Well, I think that's one that you already raised, is the misconception that sustainability costs more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a very simple demonstration of the fallacy of that thinking is that when you run a business, waste is waste. Whatever materials you source and produce into products is a revenue. Any materials that you source and throw away is a cost.
Mm-hmm.
So sustainability says take all those materials that you source and do something with them that becomes a product rather than a cost for you that you have to manage as a waste byproduct.
Mm-hmm.
And that waste byproduct could be electrons of energy not going to efficient use, or it could be material waste that we can use as a material resource rather than as a waste product that goes to landfill.
Mm-hmm. What about other misconceptions or myths that people have about this sustainability effort when it comes to energy consumption, when it comes to priorities, what people are doing as opposed to what they're not doing for sustainability efforts, things like that?
Yeah, I think one myth is that if I don't see it, it's not there. And that's a real challenge for me as a sustainability director working on a campus mm-hmm. where a lot of what's driving our efforts are things that have to do with charisma, mm-hmm. in a sense. You know, students want to see sustainability.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's true for anyone in an office environment. It's the same. Working on a project, people want to see a difference that's being made. The problem is electricity is pretty much invisible. Waste is pretty invisible because generally people throw things into trash and they don't see where it goes. So, you know, materials are somewhat invisible. I don't know what the materials in this wall are made out of. I don't know how much energy was used to produce the materials, what kind of trucks or equipment were used to transport all of that happens behind the curtain, so to speak.
Right.
So there's a lot of mythology that develops around if I don't see you doing something different, then there's no change.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a real challenge for sustainability advocates, because a lot of sustainability efforts are invisible.
You can probably save a company or an agency a whole lot more money by turning your computer off at night than putting your paper in the recycle bin, and yet one, as you say, one's visible, one's not.
Right.
And it appears that a difference is happening when it may not be as much as something else that someone could be doing.
Right. I mean, so we need to do both.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to, and part of the challenge with sustainability is that not only do we need technical solutions, but we do need cultural change too. And that's where the emphasis on if I don't see it, it doesn't exist becomes important,
mm-hmm.
because we do need to change culture. And in order to change it, we need to raise the visibility. And I think that's really what we're seeing in the last few years. And we're seeing a change in the visibility of sustainability. We're talking about it for a week on radio programs,
yeah. mm-hmm.
You know, just 5 years ago that didn't really happen.
That didn't happen. I imagine it can be a little frustrating because I think the cultural and mental changes are the hardest for people to make when they're not mandated by anybody in particular, and there's not someone there holding you accountable for making that change. And a lot of these things that we're talking about all this week on this series and that I read about in sustainability efforts aren't really that hard. They don't really change people's routines that much when they remember to do it, like turning off your computer and that kind of thing. Some of the changes that you mentioned, the roof on campus, and Federal News Radio's Jason Miller reporting about the General Services Administration changing the way that they buy buildings, essentially. Those kinds of things go in on the planning end and don't really require much difference, just a little bit of forethought and planning, and they don't cost extra money, but it's getting the end user, the person that actually can make the difference, to buy into it and remember to do it and agree to do it. I bet that can be frustrating at times.
It's both, because there's culture within those planning offices too. So
mm-hmm.
there's the culture of users who are occupants of a building. That's one type of culture, but there's also a lot of culture in, you know, the professional fields that design our built environment and that manage and operate the built environment. That's all culture too. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, if this is the company that I'm used to working with, and these are the guys I'm used to working with, and this is the way we've always done it, that's pretty hard to change too.
Yeah.
But culture change is quite possible. It's part art, part science. But we can do it. But, you know, because people are a little bit more eager to have a technical solution provided for them,
mm-hmm.
they're a little bit less willing to focus on the reality that we do need to change culture, because it feels harder than it has to be. I mean, telling people to change, the way that I try to approach it is by looking at sustainability as being an improvement in your quality of life or work,
mm-hmm.
not doing without something, or, you know, really that's what people, kind of like you were saying, you know, one myth about sustainability is that it costs more. Another myth is that it hurts,
mm-hmm.
that my life is going to be negatively impacted
yeah.
by being sustainable. The truth is the opposite extreme. A more sustainable world means a less toxic place to live. What we're doing now is toxifying where we live, which mm-hmm. is called the earth.
Mm-hmm.
When we start creating a healthier planet, I live longer, I breathe better, my children and grandchildren have a longer life. Our education improves. There's less traffic and congestion. Mm-hmm. That's just quality of life improvement, but it all goes hand in hand with sustainability.
My guest is Chris O'Brien of American University on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I want to talk some more about that culture change, because I think that a lot of the results of our Greening of Government survey reflect the change in culture in government. So we'll save some of those answers for the end and get your thoughts about how the culture can be changed even more and move more toward a more sustainable, greener government. And we'll dig into this survey, the results of which you've had a chance to take a look at, and we'll review them next on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll be right back.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by Airink.
Are we witnessing the beginning of a cyber arms race? Seems like it. The Stuxnet computer virus is taking worries about cyber warfare to a new level, as the first reported case of malicious software designed to sabotage industrial controls. Experts say it's a prototype of a cyber weapon that could lead to a new global arms race. That program targets specifically control systems built by Siemens. I'm J.J. Green.
When you think of forensics, a popular TV show with crime scene investigators probably comes to mind. But have you ever thought about forensics at the 30,000-foot level? Literally. Airink has. Airink and their partners help oversee the airspace above the nation's capital and have the ability to recreate virtually any situation to indisputably determine the facts, marrying everything from voice recordings to video to GPS. Log on to ARINC.com to learn more.
Today, you're tasked with protecting America's networks from cyber attack, training the next generation of cyber-top guns, keeping sensitive data safe and secure, and getting to your daughter's soccer game by 6. If you're in government, your cyber to-do list is challenging. Turn to Deloitte. We have the people, insight, and experience to help you address pressing cyber issues and help government help America. Insights and opportunities at Deloitte.com/federal.
Here's Dave Wintergreen, Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Information Management, Integration, and Technology, Deputy CIO, on the Federal Executive Forum on Secure Information and Intelligence Sharing, sponsored by Data Guys.
You know, you have to do this to be effective today managing information in the contested environment that we face. But you also have to do this if you intend to be an employer of choice for the next generation. This is the way they live their lives, and this is how they will expect to do work.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezor Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
The need for federal agencies to protect their personally identifiable information, PII, and other sensitive data has never been greater. With data thefts in the news, legislators are imposing higher standards for protecting information. To assist, NIST recently published guidelines for protecting the confidentiality of PII. As the leader in risk-based sensitive data discovery and protection solutions, DataGuys enables federal agencies to implement the NIST recommendations to protect PII. Visit DataGuys.com.
What will the Fed VIPs be talking about at Fed Talks 2010? Go to FedTalks.com to get the scoop. Fed Scoop will be hosting D.C.'s biggest VIP gathering of the year on Tuesday, October 12th. It's a new fiscal year for the Feds, so come hear about key initiatives and priorities from top federal agency CIOs and CTOs, network with your key prospects, clients, and partners, meet Arianna Huffington, rock out with the DJ to the White House, and enjoy performances from the Arlington rap comedian Go Remy. Go to FedTalks.com to save your spot today.
Hey there, I'm Christopher Dorabeck. Here's what we're working on for the Dorabeck Insider this afternoon. Get ready for the Green Competition. We continue our Greening of Government series. We're going to talk to the people behind a $10,000 prize. They're looking for creative designs that can turn an old federal building and make it green. And big changes in the way government contractors are getting information. We'll talk to Bill Gormley of Fed Sources about the changing government market this afternoon, 3 to 7 on the Dorabeck Insider. It's right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We're talking about the greening of government with the Director of Sustainability at American University, Chris O'Brien. And, Chris, you're here to analyze the results of our Greening of Government survey, and we'll set the stage with a few pieces of information about who answered this survey. 66% of the people who answered Our survey, work at a cabinet agency, 22% work at an independent agency. 68% of the people who answered have been in government for more than 15 years. I find that interesting because to take a survey requires some buy-in time. You have to think it's important enough to want to talk about it. And so to have a vast majority of people who are executives, I think, is a good sign. The majority of the people who answered are in the GS 11 to 13 range and up. The GS 11 to 15 segment comprised about 75% of respondents. Half of the people who responded work at large agencies over $750 million in revenue. So this primarily was responded to, the questions that we're going to analyze, that you're going to talk about. The answers are coming from people who are working primarily at the big federal agencies and primarily who have been there for a fairly long period of time. What does that say to you about the concept of sustainability in government and its importance to people?
One thing it says to me is that the longer you're part of an organization, the more you care about it. I mean, this was a voluntary survey, so for people to decide to respond to it means that they're already pre-identified as having an interest mm-hmm. in this topic. Mm-hmm. So to me, it says that people who work in the government for a long time understand the issues more and care more about greening government and therefore are going to take the time to answer the survey.
Does that comport with what you see in private sector and in academia?
Well, I think it ties into the concept that we were talking about earlier about time frame, that, you know, sustainability is something that you have to have. It's a long-term commitment, mm-hmm. you know, and that's one of the reasons that government and higher ed are both good examples of where sustainability, where there's leadership being shown in sustainability, because we've got a long-term commitment. Mm-hmm. When we build a federal building, that's a long-term commitment. It's going to be around for a long time. Mm-hmm. So you want to have a long-term, you can afford to have a long-term view.
Mm-hmm. How is that porting to the private sector? Are you starting to see it more and more in the private sector?
Well, you know, I think the private sector still, for the most part, operates on a pretty short time frame, mm-hmm. And that provides a different opportunity for sustainability leaders, which is to say, capturing, being the first on the block to be the leader of the sustainability leader within your sector, mm-hmm. and I think that's one of the more driving one of the drivers in the private sector is the ability to capture the niche.
All right. Chris O'Brien of American University is my guest. And the next questions on the survey that we're going to talk about when we come back from the break have specifically to do with people's awareness of sustainability plans. We'll talk about those when In Depth with Francis Rose continues on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Chris Maurer, CNBC Business Radio. Stocks are lower. The Dow's down 17 points. The Nasdaq lower by 26. A new report released today by ADP Employer Services shows 39,000 private sector jobs were cut in September. The numbers were a surprise as forecasts had called for about 20,000 jobs to be added during the month. A separate report adds to the grim jobs picture. Outplacement consultancy Challenger Gray and Christmas says employers planned more cuts in September, about 37,000 more. Precious metals continue to rally as investors get ready for the Federal Reserve to print more money to lift the weakening economy. Gold hit a fresh record high above $1,350 an ounce. Some employees at American Airlines will be going back to work. The carrier is recalling about 800 furloughed flight attendants and pilots. That's about 1% of its workforce. Chris Maurer, CNBC.
There's no guarantee you'll ever have a single-digit handicap. No guarantee you'll approve of your daughter's fiancé. In a world where guarantees are in short supply, thankfully there's Assured Guarantee. With municipal bonds insured by Assured Guarantee, every dime of your principal and interest is guaranteed. Assured Guarantee is the global leader in bond insurance, with the financial strength and risk management skills to stand behind every bond we insure. Talk to your financial advisor or visit thinkassuredguarantee.com.
Could switching to Geico really save you 15% or more on car insurance? Would helium make opera sound less formal and stuffy?
Quella parrucca, presto la barba.
Tutto mi chiedono, tutti mi vogliono, donna, ragazzi, vecchie fanciulle, quella sanguigna, presto biglietto. Figaro.
Be like the 4 million who switched to GEICO last year, and you too could start saving money. For a free rate quote, visit GEICO.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could...
The latest from the Federal Security Spotlight brought to you by Cisco.
These keeps up, but it's not necessarily the undisputed leader when it comes to cybersecurity. Here's General Keith Alexander, whose cyber command is just starting.
The latest from the Federal Security Spotlight brought to you by Cisco.
The U.S. keeps up, but it's not necessarily
us, and in some areas may exceed our capabilities.
To hear the entire show, log on to federalnewsradio.com. Will the top-of-mind security issues of today be the issues facing government tomorrow? Get the latest from federal experts on FISMA reform, the cyber initiative, how government is combating botnets, spyware, and other cyber evils, and more. Listen to Federal Security Spotlight, sponsored by Cisco, airing Thursday from 10 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. or on demand at federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Security Spotlight is brought to you by Cisco, the leader in federal IT security. Government personnel must continue to achieve mission-critical objectives no matter their work environment. Video conferencing technologies provide a highly effective collaboration solution for federal employees affected by budget cuts, BRAC initiatives, and telework mandates if they are secure based on open standards and deployable in limited bandwidth environments. Polycom is the first video provider to have an ultimate HD portfolio that is JITC certified, offering real-time face-to-face communication without compromising secure networks or consuming excessive bandwidth. Polycom enables government customers to collaborate over voice and video anywhere, anytime, securely both inside and outside the firewall, offering high-definition video calls at half the bandwidth of other companies. To learn more, visit polycom.com/federal.
The Telework Center arms you with all the information you need to know about teleworking in the federal government. Go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword Polycom.
A century of sickle cell. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfus with HHS HealthBeat. About 100 years ago, the first case of what's now called sickle cell disease was documented. More than 100,000 people in the United States have the inherited blood disorder, which can lead to infection, anemia, extreme pain, stroke, asthma, and even death. Although sickle cell can't be cured without a bone marrow transplant, treatments can make the symptoms less severe. And at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, Melissa Creary says people with sickle cell can do some things on their own.
You and your healthcare provider should develop a care plan together and include ways to stay hydrated, get proper rest, and maybe supplement with folic acid.
Treatment is best started early, and all states now test newborns for sickle cell. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfus.
Human capital management for the federal government is the most anticipated training conference this year, with keynote speaker John Barry, director of OPM and chief people person of the U.S. federal government. Don't miss this year's event to be held on November 15th through the 17th at the Sheraton Premier in Vienna, Virginia. Check out the website, hcmfederal.com, for more information. And to register now, mention code HCMF for a $200 discount.
We're back on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We're talking about the Federal News Radio Greening of Government Survey. It's been available for you for a number of weeks at federalnewsradio.com. The results are now available as well in our Greening the Government series page. And it's right on the homepage, linked up now at federalnewsradio.com. Chris O'Brien is Director of Sustainability at American University, my guest to analyze the results of the Greening of Government Survey. The question, are you familiar with your agency's sustainability plan? Overall, I'd have to guess this was probably not a great response. 72% of the people who answered this question answered no. That's probably not what we wanted to see, is it?
Yeah, that's something we need to work on, communicating. As I was mentioning before, you know, part of our solutions are technical and part is cultural. If we're going to achieve the cultural change that we need, people have to be familiar with what they're expected to achieve. Otherwise, there's, you know, you can't expect them to change their behavior if they don't even know that they're being asked to do something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, on the other hand, I wonder if some of these responses are people who feel like they know a little bit about it, but because they know a little bit, they know that there's a lot that they don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And so they may actually be more informed than average, but they consider themselves uninformed.
Yeah, they're familiar enough to know that they don't think they're familiar enough.
Right.
They don't know what they don't know. Question seven is, how familiar are you with the executive order calling for reducing the federal government's carbon footprint? And it's interesting that you say what you said about question six, because I think that's reflected. I think your opinion there is reflected in question seven. There were three choices for this. I've read about it. I've heard about it. I've never heard of it. A quarter of the people had never heard of the executive order calling for reducing the federal government's carbon footprint. The good news is that means at least 75% of the people are aware of it. 25%, a quarter of the respondents, have read about the executive order, have read the actual executive order, and 48% have heard about it. So at least 75%, three quarters of the people who answered this, are at least aware of what's going on.
Yeah.
Maybe not well versed in it in their own opinion.
And you've got to start somewhere, and it's translating understanding that there's a mandate into having an actionable plan.
Mm-hmm.
That's the difference between those two questions and the responses to them. I mean, I think knowing that there needs to be a plan is where you start, and that seems like where we're at with this pool.
Mm-hmm.
People know that there's a mandate. But it's taking time for it to filter down into action.
Mm-hmm. To doing something about it. Is that, considering that we are kind of at the starting point, or assuming that we're at the starting point, is 50 to 75% just awareness? Is that a pretty good place to launch from?
I think that's real good. We just did our first sustainability literacy assessment on our campus,
mm-hmm.
where we surveyed several hundred students, both on their attitudes as well as their knowledge,
mm-hmm.
of sustainability. And what we found is we're in a similar position at AU, where we've got new mandates within the last 6 months. We've got a host of new sustainability policies and a climate action plan.
Mm-hmm.
The 400 some student respondents to this survey, I want to say the awareness of the policies and plan was in the 90th percentile.
Mm-hmm.
So they understood that there's now a university-wide emphasis.
Yeah.
But when it came down to the practicalities, and it hadn't gotten there yet.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very similar to this.
All right. So that's encouraging. Question eight, do you know whether your agency has a sustainability officer? This is where we start to get to the nuts and bolts of what people actually know about the agency's sustainability operations. And this is, again, reflected in your analysis, because here we have 80% of the people saying they don't know whether the agency has a sustainability officer, somebody directly responsible for overseeing these efforts.
And I would read that in part to mean that they don't know because there isn't one.
Mm-hmm.
If there was one, they would probably know.
I see.
At least, you know, given time. I mean, I was the first sustainability director at American University. It's taken me about a year for the university community, which is about 15,000 people, to become fully aware that, okay, this is a new function that's
mm-hmm.
being staffed. So people saying that they don't know, either it's because the position is so new, or it's because there isn't a position yet.
Right.
And this, you know, I think also ties into the sense that I was saying earlier, that in order to go from a mandate to action, you need to staff it. It has to be somebody's responsibility,
mm-hmm.
Who's going to be held accountable for it. But you know what? One other angle on this is that there are many sustainability functions that aren't called sustainability. They're called energy manager.
Mm-hmm.
They're called we have lots of waste reduction positions in government.
Mm-hmm.
It's a different term,
mm-hmm.
But it's part of sustainability. And there are really lots of, you know, we have procurement directors whose job is to fulfill the federal acquisition regulation. There are lots of sustainability requirements in the FAR,
mm-hmm.
but the people who are fulfilling that function aren't called a sustainability officer.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're pushing sustainability into people's conventional areas of or territory and expertise.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be called sustainability.
That's interesting because that fits with what we talked about at the beginning of the show with when we were talking about myths and misconceptions and just the visual idea that if you don't see it happening and you're not able to attach a name to it that includes sustainability or green or any of the vocabulary that people are used to associating with that kind of thing, then it doesn't necessarily count. And so there are that fits with your idea that a lot of these things count and are relevant that might not seem to be right off the top.
Yeah, and that to me is a success story because sustainability eventually needs to become not something that has a niche function, but something that's integrated through into everyone's everyday job description.
Mm-hmm. It's not surprising that the vast majority of the people then didn't know whether their agency had a sustainability officer. The people who do know who the person is seem to have had at least some cursory interaction. Over half of them either have met the sustainability officer or have heard that person speak. So that I would think that's a pretty good number. I mean, over half of the people having some interaction with that person.
Yeah, and that speaks to the complicated nature of professional sustainability work, which is that it's a little bit of everything.
Mm-hmm.
And really what I'm finding is that along with a lot of my peers in other institutions who serve similar sustainability functions, is that one of the first areas that you start segmenting off into a new job description is sustainability communications.
Mm-hmm.
Because not only do you need to be doing sustainability, but you need to be talking about it. And the talking about it is the part that impacts other people's behavior. So this half of people having met or heard speak attests to the fact that part of a sustainability job function is telling the story. Eventually we need to specialize that function, into sustainability communications and outreach functions as such.
Mm-hmm. When we talk about what sustainability is and what it isn't and what greening is and what it isn't, there are some specific things that people have in mind. Question 10 gets to some of the individual things, and we'll talk about that when we come back from the break. My guest is Chris O'Brien, Director of Sustainability at American University. We're analyzing the results of Federal News Radio's Greening of Government survey. You can see all the results and follow along at federalnewsradio.com. Back in a moment on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
I'll say, most people know that they could save 15% or more on their car insurance by switching to GEICO. Helping people save money, it's what I do. And quite frankly, it's something that GEICO's been doing for over 70 years. But here's the really good part. GEICO is actually a shorthand term for Government Employees Insurance Company. So yeah, GEICO and the government employees, we go way back. Which is why, if you're a federal employee, you can save even more money on top of GEICO's already low rates. And the news just gets better. GEICO's got an impressive 97% customer satisfaction rate. So you get some of the best service this side of the Potomac, and you get to save hundreds at the same time. Win-win, my friend. Oh, I've got to run, but I'll let my friend Mike fill you in on the rest. All yours, mate.
Thank you, my little green friend. Hey, it's Mike Causey. If you're a federal employee, then I've got some good news for you. Just call GEICO at 1-800-947-AUTO or visit geico.com and see how much you could save.
Time and money. Midas wants to save you both. Come in for an oil change and we'll rotate your tires and visually check your brakes, all for just $24.99. That's an oil change, tire rotation, and visual brake check for just $24.99. Surprised? Don't be. Helping you save time and money. That's the Midas touch.
Up to 5 quarts conventional oil taxes and synthetics extra shop fees may apply. Most vehicles at participating Midas.
It's been almost a year since the president signed the executive order to make government more environmentally friendly. Federal News Radio has been tracking how agencies and industry are creating sustainable and climate-friendly operations. Our special report, The Greening of Government, takes you behind the directive to see what worked, what didn't, and what to expect in the future. The Greening of Government at 8 minutes past the hour, mornings and afternoons on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Chris O'Brien, Director of Sustainability at American University. And we're talking about the Federal News Radio Greening the Government survey. The results are available at federalnewsradio.com. We've been asking you to take our survey and tell us what you think about what is going on at your agency when it comes to the greening of government. The results are posted now on our website. We're up to question number 10, and question 10 kind of relates to what you and I were talking about before the break, Chris, and that is the idea of people's changing perceptions of what relates to sustainability and what doesn't. Question 10, what steps is your agency taking to reduce its carbon footprint? And some choices on here, as I said during the break. I don't know that I would have necessarily thought of all of these as counting, really. Encouraging alternative transportation options like metro, biking, carpooling. We just had the event with Director Barry on the bike share program the other day. Greening your cafeteria or kitchen area. A big deal was made about that when it happened in the House of Representatives was a year and a half ago, where the materials that are all compostable and so on. Is that maybe part of the problem, getting people to understand that things that they're doing already or things that they like or that they approve of doing are part of this whole thing?
It's a complicated answer. People are overwhelmed in general, right? Everyone has – their day is full of things. So on the one hand, we need to develop a lot of new knowledge about sustainability. One solution to that is developing – tasked individuals with sustainability knowledge who would understand that these things all relate.
Mm-hmm.
But for most of the rest of the people, we need to raise education a little bit, but we also just need to provide that the easy way of doing things needs to be the right way of doing things.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of that is planning and implementing ways that facilitate me being greener without me necessarily even knowing it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I think one of the things that we talked about during the break was, you know, this idea of alternative transportation. If you say, well, do you carpool to work or do you take the metro? People might not immediately consider that in the same breath as do you recycle?
Mm-hmm.
But most people think of recycling as a green thing to do. And I think the survey response here show that almost everyone responded that their company or agency is recycling, and that's what they're doing to reduce their footprint. But we know statistically that the majority of people who work for the federal government don't commute by a single occupancy vehicle trip.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people who are actually already commuting with alternative transportation aren't connecting that to sustainability.
Yeah.
So, you know, to some degree, I think that's okay, because not everyone needs to know every area of expert knowledge.
Right.
And just I need to be able to come in and flip the light switch on and know that the electricity is working.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need to know how the electricity is routed in the ceiling, but somebody does. Mm-hmm. We have professional electricians.
Yes.
We have far too few professional sustainability officers.
Mm-hmm.
So we're missing that top level function. But for most people, they just need to come in and know that they can turn the light switch on and things work.
Right.
If they had a composting bin and they would put things in it.
Mm-hmm.
They don't need to necessarily be the ones to decide to make that
right
operational.
Yeah. 92% of the people who responded to our survey said that their agency has a recycling effort, paper cans and plastic and so on. Is that a good number, high, low? Where does that fit?
Well, I would think in the federal government it should be just about 100%.
Mm-hmm.
So this is close.
Okay. Energy usage reduction, 41%. Requiring telework, only 14%. I mean, if I had a dollar for every telework story, Chris, that I have done, every conversation I've had about it over the last 2 years that I've had this show, I could probably take a couple of days off. And yet we're still only at about 15% of agencies that are telling their people, we want you to do this because it's important to the way that we run the operation.
Right. Well, as with many sustainability questions, there are hidden trade-offs involved.
Mm-hmm.
And because it is a complicated question, you need experts who can look at this question, because the obvious thought is, okay, well, I'm not driving to work, therefore, I'm not creating emissions from my car driving to work if I'm telecommuting. But at the same time, if your office is doing a good job at being energy efficient, and if it's designed to be occupied by office workers, and it's designed to do that efficiently, that's going to be, generally speaking, more efficient than your home is,
mm-hmm.
where your home is not designed to have one person in it with all the lights on all day long
right.
at one computer.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, it might reduce the carbon footprint of the organization, but it's transferring it to someone else,
yeah.
i.e., you know, the owner's home.
Mm-hmm.
So as far as it being a solution to climate change in general, I think there might be some role for telework, particularly if you design telework solutions in new construction. But for existing buildings, typically what will happen is there are fewer offices with bodies in them during the day, but those offices still have the lights on. The HVAC equipment is still designed for
yeah.
a full building.
Mm-hmm.
You're just not fully occupying it, and mm-hmm. that's being less efficient, not more efficient.
Yeah. One of the things about the telework discussion that always, I think, is kind of lost is the idea that people automatically go to the idea that teleworking means I'm working at my house. And we have, I think there are 13 telework centers for government agencies all around the Beltway. They're outside the Beltway to make it easier for those people to use them. And they're terrific facilities. I mean, you can go there and essentially sign into your office there. And I don't think they get enough coverage or enough play.
Yeah, well, that's where it starts making a lot more sense.
Yeah.
To me.
Yeah, where you have
bring the office closer to your home.
Yeah, have a group of people doing the same thing and creating those efficiencies that you talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the other points on this question that people talk about happening at their agencies, greening their cafeteria or kitchen areas 25%, and again, encouraging alternative transportation options 55%. And that kind of goes back to the visual thing that we talk about. I imagine I'm doing a lot better at sustainability just by leaving my car at home and taking Metro than if I recycle five cans and half a ream of paper a week.
Commuting is a very significant portion of greenhouse gas emissions.
All right.
And alternative transportation, absolutely, we need to reinvest in alternative transportation.
Are the steps your agency or company is taking making a difference? That's question number 11. Over half the people aren't sure. Just over 50% either don't know or aren't sure. 31 say yes, 17% say no. Is that good or bad or about par for the course?
Well, you know, I think it speaks to another challenge with sustainability proponents in general is that we don't take a lot of time to celebrate our successes
mm-hmm.
because there's so much work to do. We feel like anytime we get something done, it's right on to the next thing.
Yeah, there's still 50 more things you got to do.
Yeah. So, you know, I think part of the reason why people don't know if things are working or not is because the people who are implementing the changes don't take a lot of time to communicate at the end that here's what we accomplished. Let's have an office pizza party
right.
to celebrate that we just reduced our greenhouse gas emissions by 5%.
Uh-huh. And
instead,
make sure,
it's you get, on to the next.
You got to make sure the pizzas, too, come in biodegradable boxes, right?
Yeah, and with organic ingredients.
Exactly. Chris O'Brien's Director of Sustainability at American University. A couple of more questions in Federal News Radio's Greening the Government survey to cover when we continue on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by Arink.
Are we witnessing the beginning of a cyber arms race? Seems like it. The Stuxnet computer virus is taking worries about cyber warfare to a new level as the first reported case of malicious software designed to sabotage industrial controls. Experts say it's a prototype of a cyber weapon that could lead to a new global arms race. That program targets specifically control systems built by Siemens. I'm J.J. Green.
When you think of forensics, a popular TV show with crime scene investigators probably comes to mind. But have you ever thought about forensics at the 30,000-foot level? Literally. Air Inc. has. Air Inc. and their partners help oversee the airspace above the nation's capital and have the ability to recreate virtually any situation to indisputably determine the facts, marrying everything from voice recordings to video to GPS. Log on to ARINC.com to learn more.
As government and commercial companies continue to improve their business processes, they're finding that IT requirement analysis, market reviews, product selection, and ongoing operations are taxing the resource base of their employees. TMR is here to help. TMR provides enterprise architecture, governance, and IT operational support to ensure our customers' IT investments are aligned with specific business goals, objectives, and capital investment strategies. For more details, visit TMR at tmrhq.com or call 703-323-1700.
Please join Jim Fleisig Wednesday, October 19th at noon for his monthly series, The Federal Executive Forum. A panel will focus on identity management efforts in the federal government. The panel includes government leaders from DHS, OSD, and GSA. Don't miss the Federal Executive Forum, Wednesday, October 19th, 12 noon, right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, and online at federalnewsradio.com. Sponsored by HP, SafeNet, and UMUC.
FLIR Systems has a singular focus on providing thermal imaging night vision systems for search and rescue, surveillance, and force protection across the globe. We proudly support the men and women who serve, defend, and protect by providing leading-edge technology to enhance mission success. Today, customers trust in FLIR Systems' thermal imaging products and rely on our responsive support worldwide. Visit FLIR.com/GS for more details. FLIR Systems, extraordinary vision for extraordinary heroes.
Companies win federal contracts every day. Your business should be one of them. Get the latest on the top federal contracting opportunities for 2011 at Input's Fed Focus event. Fed Focus is the government contracting community's premier event that showcases the outlook for defense and civilian markets, data center consolidation trends, and more. Join Input on November 4th at the Fairview Park Marriott in Falls Church, Virginia, and lead your business to success. Register at FedFocus2011.input.com or call Input Events at 703-707-3698.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest is Chris O'Brien, Director of Sustainability at American University. And we're talking about the results of Federal News Radio's Greening the Government survey. You can see the results for yourself at federalnewsradio.com. Right on the homepage, you'll find a link to our Greening the Government series. This question 12, I think, is good because the responses that we got are good because the question is, how optimistic are you that greening the government efforts will make a difference? And 46% somewhat optimistic, 14% very optimistic. So that means a vast majority of people who work for the government think that this is a good thing and is going to do something important.
Yeah. Well, I wake up every day feeling optimistic because my job is advancing sustainability,
mm-hmm.
and I get to see the results of it. So when you get to see the results, it makes you an optimist. You see cleaner air, cleaner water, less trash. That's reason for optimism. And I think, you know, the story of sustainability is one of hope for a better place to live.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I would think that's a pretty compelling story for most people.
All right, I'm going to dash a little bit of that hope then by looking at the results of question number 13. What's the effect of the White House's attention to making the government become more energy efficient? Top two answers, 40%, lots of talk, not a lot of action. And 21%, another unfunded mandate. So here the majority of people think that there's not a whole lot going on and it's extra work for them to do.
Well, one of the great things about energy efficiency is that it funds itself. It's the low-hanging fruit of sustainability.
Mm-hmm.
When you save energy, you save money. And oftentimes in a very quick time frame, some energy efficiency projects start paying for themselves the first day.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, with energy efficiency, you can say it's an unfunded mandate, but the reality is it's going to save money. Now, lots of talk, not a lot of action. You know, depends on what you consider the scope of the problem to be and how quickly we need to get to the solution. I read in the newspaper this morning in the Post, solar panels are going back in the White House.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think we need those visible symbolic acts like that to give people a sense that this is a good story and there's symbolic action that will result in more attention, more emphasis on down the line.
Yeah.
So that it's not just talk. It's, you know, here's the example that we're setting.